The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Today on Happy, Sad, Confused, Nicholas Holt. I'm playing J.D. Salinger, Tolkien, and the X-Men. Hey guys, I'm Josh Horowitz. It's time for another Happy, Sad, Confused podcast. Welcome to the show, new and old. An old returning guest. You're not even a guest. You're a co-host.
How many new...
Sammy.
Yes. How many new guests do you think we have?
Right now? Guest listeners? Are we calling them guest listeners?
Yeah. Like if you're not
returning.
A
solid baker's dozen.
Yeah. How many newbies we got?
No. Let me hear from the newbies out there.
Let us know. Rate, review, subscribe.
I'll tell you who's not a newbie. Nick Holt.
Sure isn't.
Nick Holt is a returning guest to Happy, Sad, Confused. He's a fun interview, and I think a lot of people don't realize how fun and dry and interesting Nick is, because you know he projects kind of like, you know, leading man, like he's like super absurdly good looking and like, you know, has kind of played these parts that aren't necessarily super quirky. They're often kind of like down the middle, but he, in person and in my experience, as somebody with a lot of intelligence and eccentricity, and he's just an interesting, fun guy. So the last podcast with him was a blast, and this one was as well. He came by to talk about his new film, which everybody should check out. It's called Rebel in the Rye. He plays J.D. Salinger. That's a tall order, Sammy.
Yeah.
And it's about, in part, the writing of Catcher in the Rye, and it gets at a little bit of the mystique of J.D. Salinger. And it's a really good film. I saw it first at Sundance. They've done a re-edit of it, and I think it's an even better film now. Nick and I talk about that. He's also going to be playing another beloved writer in his next film. He's doing a J.R. Tolkien biopic, which should be cool.
Wow. So everyone looks at him and they're like, he could play smart.
Exactly. Yes, we joke about that. Like, is this like an elaborate scheme just to portray yourself as super smart, like playing smart people? Of course, he's also in production right now in the new X-Men film. So we talk about his experiences there and how that's going. They're shooting in Montreal. Speaking of Canada, Sammy and I are just back from Toronto.
Where we saw Nick Holt.
We did see Nick Holt. Yeah, Nick has
in the wild.
We saw Nick in the wild.
It was exciting. He's so handsome.
That was fun. We went to I went to see The Current War, which is Nick's new film, which he has a small but pivotal role as Nikola Tesla, and Michael Shannon and Benedict Cumberbatch star in that one. And yes, Sammy and
You're
I.
Will, Sam and,
I was going to say, Sam and I went to the big party. Mm-hmm. It was fun, right?
Josh didn't tell me that we were going to parties, so I was wearing white sneakers and a denim shirt, and everyone else is in dresses, so it's a little sensitive.
She's still a little raw. Yeah. Did anybody in the party flash you a dirty look?
Yes, everyone did, and they snickered as I walked
by.
That's
not true. Did Benedict? I introduced you to Benedict.
And he was like, what are you wearing?
No, he didn't. He was not.
You look ridiculous.
He was not.
It was perfect.
He was actually delightful. And he ended up seeing a lot of films in Toronto. I ended up seeing The Shape of Water. I was seated two seats away from Benedict. It was amazing. It was magical.
Fate. Yeah.
The Current War is coming soon. And we talk a little bit about that as well. So obviously a lot on Nicholas's plate. And he's an actor very much in demand. It was wonderful to have him back. He's always welcome here. I think we'll go right to the podcast just because we have an embarrassment of riches. We have another podcast that should be going up very soon. So enjoy this one in the meantime. He's a Happy, Sad, Confused regular. And make sure to seek out Rebel in the Rye and enjoy this conversation with Nick Holt.
The charming Nick Holt.
The dashing Nick Holt.
Okay, you're obsessed with him.
What? You egged me on. Okay. We thought we were recording, but we weren't. Now we are. Now it's all on the
Thank
record.
God. And I can't believe you said that terrible thing about that person.
No. it's good to have you back.
It's good to be back. I had a lot of fun last time. Thank you for allowing me after just last time talking nonsense for a good half hour.
This is therapy for both of us.
It kind of is.
That's the goal. I do feel like we had a special time on the podcast last time, and then when I was looking up what you've been up to, I see that you're not a one podcast kind of guy, which is cool. That's fine. Whatever. I mean, you know, My Dad Wrote a Porno is a very popular podcast, and that's fine. That's whatever. Dude, if you just want
to
just
like that porno. Have you listened to it?
You know what? I've heard from
many... like that porno. Did I just say? I meant podcast. Oh no, this is horrendous.
Top five porn for you.
I like that porno.
I hadn't listened to it, but I've heard from a lot of people that I respect that it's amazing.
Dude, it's really funny.
And I listened to yours as a gateway, and I'm now going to go back and start listening.
Get it.
We're not going to talk about pornography here. We're going to keep it classy.
Fine.
I mean, we can if you want.
Please.
No.
You can start, though, just so I know the level we're going
on. Oh, no. No. How is it going? You're in the middle of shooting. Your half of your brain and mind is in Montreal, I'm sure.
X-Men in Montreal at the moment, Dark Phoenix.
Yes.
It's going very well. Simon Kinberg, who wrote on the last few and produced many brilliant movies, is now directing this one. So
how's the vibe? How's he as a director?
Dude, we're vibing on this one. It's good. No, yeah. It's really good. He's, you know, he's wanting to make it very grounded and emotional and dramatic and darker, I think. And from what I've seen, he cut together a little short, like halfway point,
nice
thing. And I didn't watch all of it because I don't like watching myself. But the bits that I saw of other people's looked really great.
Excellent.
And it looked, yeah, it just looked like it was tearing up the X-Men world a little bit and then being like, who's this?
Have you spent some time with Chastain? I love me some Jessica
Chastain. I haven't really yet, okay. Unfortunately. No, she's just coming in, just about to start. I saw her very briefly once when I was dressed up in the full blue beast gear.
That's the way you want to
meet
people.
And in passing, she said, are you hot? And I said, yes. And that was kind of the whole interaction. So pretty basic on that so far, but we'll get there.
That's a basis of a relationship, I feel like.
Exactly.
What was I going to say? Oh, so what have you guys been up to offset? Because you guys, I feel like, always in Montreal when you're making the X-Men films. I feel like on Instagram, last time you showed me some Dub Smash action.
Oh, yeah, we had good Dub Smash action.
Had the concerts. Last time there was Taylor Swift, concert, I know. Taylor there was Swift.
There was the BB gun era where we were shooting each other until
have
that
you all matured
stopped.
Yet? Have you all?
You know what? We've been pretty tame this time. I think we've really focused a lot.
McAvoy hasn't broken any walls.
He hasn't broken anything yet. On the person. no, but you know the only thing we've done is we went out and bought bikes to get around the city, okay. And we kitted those out. So he's got like a bubble machine on the back of his bike. So
like
when you ride along
car,
behind
like
him, he's got like a little bubble thing that sprays out bubbles. And I've got a water pistol on the front of mine so I can water pistol gun people on the front.
Is this a usual
tassels,
option you can get?
Flags. The brilliant thing is we went to this Hans Zimmer concert and they were like, oh, the boys are coming, they're on their bikes. And they thought we were going to turn up. Oh, cookie delivery. Thank you so much.
Oh, you have a selection.
Oh, and goldfish.
Nicholas Holt
Thank
needs
so
cookies
much.
Cookies every half an hour. This is a little known fact.
Sorry, I haven't eaten since this morning. I'm just. Do you want some of this?
No, I'm good.
I want a dessert.
No, I'm fine. Thank you, though. Let's hear you eat a Milano cookie. This is what podcasts are made of.
I'm going to be really quiet. Can you talk for a second?
Sure. So my favorite movie of yours.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
Rebel in the Rye is wonderful. Oh, don't, you're eating so slowly, too. Just get it in there.
Have you seen it?
Of course. I've seen it twice. I saw it at Sundance.
Okay.
And I know you guys did a little tweaking to it.
What do you think of the new cut?
Well, to be honest, he's going off mic to shoe. To be honest, the haze of Sundance, I honestly don't, I couldn't tell you specifically what the major changes are. You're obviously super close to it. Mm. And like Sundance, you're only devoting 30% of your brain to it. So I'm actually glad I got a chance to see it again.
Right.
I don't know. What's the biggest change like structurally that Danny did?
Well, it was quite a big change, actually. I mean, it was kind of one of those things that after that screening, Danny was like, you know what, I see the things that I would like to change and make clearer in the film now. Mm. Danny Strong, who wrote and directed it. So I've never been in this situation before whereby we'd finished the film, he'd cut the film, was bought to be released.
Right.
And then I got sent through a new draft of the script, and I was like, well, this is weird.
So new narration?
Yeah, so there's new narration, and there's new structure as well, whereby originally the film was starting in Central Park, and then flashed back from there, but instead now J.D. Salinger, after World War II, was admitted into a psych ward sort of mental hospital. So now we start in the hospital with him and his thoughts. So now the first half of the movie is from that perspective and him writing a letter to Whit Burnett, who was his professor at Columbia, played by Kevin Spacey in the movie. So you have that, and then so almost the movie is in two parts now. We have that letter up until a certain point, and then you have a letter narrated from the end of the movie,
right?
In kind of the resolution of it all. So those were the major things. Yeah, new narration and new formats in terms of where the story's perspective was being told from.
So having said that, you can't stand to watch yourself. Have you watched both cuts of this?
I did.
Okay, that speaks well to it.
Yeah, dude. I watched it because obviously it was one of those things where. It was interesting because IFC bought the film and then they were like, well, we're going to test this version of the film.
Mm.
They tested it and it scored well. And then they were like, all right, well, Danny was like, I really want to make these changes. I feel like it's a better movie. So they let him make the changes, but they said, like, you know, we're going to test it. And if it doesn't test as well, then obviously we've then got a strange situation on our hands where, like, do we release the film that tested better, but the filmmaker isn't necessarily think is the right cut. Right. So, but they tested it and it tested higher. Brilliant.
Nice.
Everything was great. And then everyone was like, all right, so this is obviously the version of the movie. And I watched it because it was very difficult for me to take my head. We're being very serious in this podcast, by the way.
Don't worry, we'll go off the rails in a second.
It was very difficult to go back after having made a movie, done the whole shoot, and seen the cut. And then to go back and reread it and then see it again in a different edit, it was very difficult because it's difficult at that point to
have let go of the other
perspective. Yeah, and that's kudos to Danny on that he could figure it out, because I couldn't see the wood through the trees at that point.
So is it odd doing, so you already give a little context that this is the story of one of the most infamous talented writers in history, J.D. Salinger,
yeah.
Also like noted recluse, press averse to say the least. I mean, knowing you're doing something like this, knowing that like if he were around, he would hate this movie that it existed, probably. Nothing against the movie.
No.
But he would not want it to exist.
And I don't think it would have been right to make this movie at the right time when he was alive. But I think, in hindsight, his story is so incredible.
Yeah.
And so inspirational for me. Like, making it and trying to inhabit him and his work ethic, but also his dedication, all these things, I was, like, really inspired. And also, in terms of that PTSD element and all these things that I think... there's a lot that can be taken from his story, from people watching the film. So that's the real positive of it.
Sure.
But yeah, there was certainly a moment, when I called up Danny and I was like, Danny, dude, I don't know. Like, the more I researched, the more I was like, whoa, this is, because I loved the script and loved the character and really wanted to play the part. But then I was like, wow, this is a lot more I'm taking on than I ever realized at first.
Because it's interesting, it's hard to kind of capture like the creative process like on screen. I feel like, and this film has a lot of like narration and scenes of like, him literally writing and sitting and like, and that can like, unless you have a really strong writer like Danny interpreting or using his actual words, it can kind of feel a little rote, feel a little pedantic, it could just not work. I think it's a testament to your performance and to Danny's work that it is kind of feels dynamic and it doesn't really put you in his brain. And it's quite a brain. Like, he was a neurotic to say the least.
He was a fascinating character in person and evolved so much throughout his lifetime. But also this strange thing where we're creating a character based off of all the facts we can find out about him, but having not, there's not videos of him or recordings of him. So then you're in a kind of weird situation where people have, obviously, preconceived notions of him and who he was.
Right.
But even like the reclusive nature of him, that was when he first moved out of New York, that was, to find peace and to carry on writing. But he was very much a part of society. And would have youth groups around and would go to church and be very much an active member in the society.
Yeah, he wasn't Howard Hughes hiding in a basement. Wasn't participating in press and
he just didn't want press. He didn't want his face on the book covers. He didn't want blurb about him because he thought the story should speak for themselves.
Yeah. Do you there's a sequence in this where he's burned by a what he thinks is kind of, because I think it's like a school kind of thing.
A scene from essentially there was this young girl called Shirley Blaney who came in and wrote an article and saying it was for the school paper, and then it was printed in the local newspaper, and that was kind of the last straw for him because, Salinger, he wrote a lot about children and saw them as being very pure and, you know, the world hadn't destroyed them or tainted them yet.
Right.
And, you know, a lot of their stories revolve around them. So I think when that happened, that was kind of a big turning point in terms of him kind of shutting himself off and not wanting to speak to people and communicate about work and things, right, because he felt like he'd been taken advantage of. And that was something that he always reacted very strongly to. I remember reading a story from someone about he'd written a short story and they'd printed it in, I think it might have been Cosmopolitan magazine back then or something, mm-hmm, but they'd changed the title unbeknownst to him, and he was furious and he never spoke to this person again. Right. He met up with them, scolded them for it, couldn't believe that they'd done this to him, and then their relationship was done.
Wow, now I know not to misquote you in a podcast. You could go hard for Salinger on me. Yeah. Do you, I mean, but is that a hard lesson for you even in your own career? I mean, obviously every public figure kind of warns that, like, you know, a lot of you seem, in my experience with you, you're an open person, and yet you have to, like, keep some things for yourself, and you only learn that, I think, by going through it, right? By saying too much and seeing sort of things taken out of context. Was there kind of a turning point for you where you kind of learned, like, okay, like, as much as I want to be an open book and, like, be friendly, like, I have to, like, somehow preserve something of myself or else I'm going to be burned?
Yeah, and I think that's partly just taking time to yourself and doing things outside of vision that, you know, you care about and find therapeutic in a way. But also, yeah, there's a certain thing of sharing too much. But I think now, you know, nowadays everyone expects and wants more and more.
Yeah.
And it should be applauded in lots of ways. You know, there's lots of people talking about things that are very important and do help, you know, other people struggling with the same thing when they're discussed openly by people who are in the public eye.
Right.
But yeah, there are obviously also at the same time elements to your own personality and self and life that you want to keep. Otherwise,
there's nothing left.
There's
nothing there. there's also talk you're going to be another quite notable author sometime soon. Tolkien.
I'm going to play Tolkien. Yeah, researching that at the moment.
That's amazing. So, so for the record, I want to be clear about this. Not every well-known great writer was as attractive as Nicholas Holt. You're not going to play George R.R. Martin anytime soon. Let's not go crazy,
dude. Who knows? I might just try and tick off all the authors. I play J.K. Rowling and George Martin. All of them. you say you'd watch that?
Absolutely.
The school years of J.K. Rowling with me.
Now, did Tolkien, I don't know anything about Tolkien's story, did he have, like, a friend that looked a lot like Gollum? Is there, like,
Well, no, it's not the friend story there. Well, it is. There's a group of boys that he grew up with at King Edward School and then through Oxford a fair bit, called the TCBS, which is the Tea Club and Barovian Society.
Oh.
And they were basically guys who were interested in writing and music and poetry and all these things, and kind of inspired each other and pushed each other. And Tolkien's worlds all developed from his love of language. He was a philologist and kind of just loved creating languages from when he was a kid and studying them. So he kind of started creating these languages, but then from that realized that you need a mythology and a world around these stories and a history to these languages to make them feel really lived in. So his whole thing started to develop from that. But yeah, he had this group of friends and then was involved during World War One, fought in the Battle of the Somme, and pretty much all of that group of guys got killed through that.
Wow.
So yeah, that's kind of his story before we know him. And then he came out of that, and it took him, I don't know, 7 years to write The Hobbit, and then another 15 for The Lord of the Rings. And they were all things that this world that he'd created along with the Silmarillion and everything, but not put into paper and onto stories.
Yeah. Were you growing up? Were you big?
Dude, I freaked out at Lord of the Rings.
Did that's you really?
What you're gonna ask. Yeah.
Books and films, just everything.
Yeah, I was all over them. That was, I think, the first one came out maybe when I was 10 or 11,
right,
and that was like they came out just before Christmas, and that was like the Christmas cinema trip to see Lord of the Rings
for 3 years.
I just
amazing.
Loved them. I was like, this is real. This is what movies need to be.
Did you ever get an audition for even The Hobbit in recent years? Did you get a meeting?
Nothing.
What?
Nothing. Not a peep. In hindsight, I'm pretty mad about it.
Sorry.
What the hell?
did you... Hobbit, though, I mean, we love Peter Jackson, but it didn't need to be 3 films, let's be honest.
To be honest with you, I love that book. I was given that book by Chris and Paul Veit, directors of About a Boy.
Sure.
When we finished that, they gave me that book, and that was the first time I read it. But I haven't seen all the Hobbit films.
Oh, okay.
Saw the first one.
Fair enough. I was going to say, so you didn't get your audition for War of the Rings. I'm sorry to bring that up. What about Harry Potter?
I did.
You're the right age for Harry Potter.
For Harry Potter, did. I was in there with Columbus, who was directing the first one.
Was it for
with
Harry?
Some fake glasses on, pretending to be Harry. Yeah,
what?
Yeah, yeah, I did. Yeah.
Can you recreate your audition? What did you say?
I don't know. Probably some wizardy stuff.
This is why you didn't get it. By the way,
it's pretty clear, isn't
you're going off book. You're like some wizardy stuff.
All right.
Do I have the part
so
now?
So I walk in. Hermione, you're right. Some wizardy stuff. Is this a wand? Yeah, that'll do it. You got it the wrong way around. Shut up. Where's Ronnie? There he is. All right. Off to Gringotts.
Where's the contract? No, I'm not going to do a three-picture deal. I'm going to do one at a time. I need points on the back end.
Look, I'm 11 years old. I know what I need.
So was that a blow when you didn't get that one?
It's a big blow. I don't know if I want to talk about it yet.
Wait, did you get the callbacks? Like, were you, like, in the running, actually?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Like, at one point, I think I went in and auditioned for it, like, maybe four, 5 times.
I had no idea. Have I stumbled onto something?
I don't know how far or how close or in the running I was, but, I went quite a few times.
Could you imagine your life, that you would have had a totally different life?
Dude, imagine if I was Harry Potter right now. How much better would this interview be?
No. I love Dan. I love you equally in your own wonderful
Dan
ways.
Too. I love Dan too. He's the best.
You're twice as tall as him, but much taller.
I would still have a cape on. I'd have a little wizarding hat.
You'd be...
I'd put spells on people.
The reason I asked you if you auditioned is you came dressed fully on as Harry Potter into this podcast, and I thought it was the elephant in the room. Someone had to address it.
I'm still so in it.
When's the last time you cried over losing out on a role?
Ooh, good question.
I was due.
Oh, I don't think I've... not since I was a kid. No, you know what? I wouldn't cry a lot when I didn't get a role. Mm-hmm. I would cry at the end of a job.
Oh, that's sweet.
Because it would be like... I would throw myself into it wholeheartedly, and I'd be like, these are my best friends, this is my life. And then like 6 weeks later or however long later, it would be over, and I'd be like...
But we were
my
friends.
Mom said I cried for like 2 days at the end of one job. I mean, I'm sure not straight. That would be ridiculous. But, no, what an emotional wreck.
When you called Hugh Grant and it was a 555 number. Going, like, wait, there are only 3 digits in the phone number. I'm sorry to hear that. I also wanted to ask about when you came in. I was mentioning Toronto. I'll be there, and we're not sure if you're going to be able to sneak off in between X-Men shenanigans, but the current war...
Yeah,
also known as the film that you grew crazy facial hair for, silly facial hair for.
Dude, I got a nice mustache for that.
Is this your first on-screen mustache?
Yeah.
Congrats, buddy.
Thank you. Wow. It's a big moment.
It is. It's huge. That's why you took the role, right?
Yeah.
Were you relieved that you could grow?
I was ringing around town being like, anyone got used for a mustache? And like,
it's a strange request.
It wasn't grown for the role. It was grown, and then I was like, this now needs to be placed into a movie.
Who can use this magic, this wonder? Can't deny this.
People act differently when you've got a mustache.
Yeah? What's the big... How do they treat you? Like a weird porn star? Like a...
Yeah. I'd got that a lot. I got like, the 70s? What are you, porn star? And I'd be like, yeah.
Yeah? What? Why so judgy?
What about it? Dude, I think... Like, this is really sad, but I've realized that I've got my like Tesla socks on.
That's amazing.
Check out.
Is that a tradition? Do you do that for every character you play?
No, this was bought by a friend of me. He was like, dude, I saw these socks and thought of you. And I was like, nice.
Was that a fun one to dig into, playing a real-life luminary like Tesla?
Oh, yeah. I mean, it was incredible. Alfonso, the director's brilliant. But then also, you know, back with your boy, Mike Shannon. That was kind of one of the big parts of it for me. Just I wanted to do more scenes with him. And obviously, Ben Cumberbatch as well. So I was like, sweet, I can go in and... have fun and play around with those guys for a little bit and learn about Tesla. Fantastic.
And have a creepy mustache.
And have a mustache.
Everybody wins. Yeah. Maybe get some cool socks out of it.
Did.
Nailed it.
Peaked.
The last person I remember that played Tesla was David Bowie.
Yeah. I would listen to Bowie when I was like researching.
Really?
Yeah, yeah. I'd sit there reading but listen to Bowie.
That's amazing.
Because in a weird way it felt connected.
Huh. That's great. This is tangent. Rock star you would want to play on screen.
Is there a rock star I'd want to play on screen? No.
No?
Nah.
You want to be a rock star in real life?
I've read a few rock star scripts.
Yeah.
And I think they're tricky, but also they're
Freddie Mercury didn't do it for you?
They're very much of the era. Dude, he looks great.
I haven't seen the photo yet. That just came out, right?
Yeah, it just came out. Yeah, he looks great as Freddie Mercury. He's a great choice. I'm looking forward to seeing that film. But and by the way, I grew up listening to Queen, so that's exciting.
Yeah.
But I don't know, like, it's difficult, I think, the rock star.
Yeah. Well, biopics, as you know, I mean, like, they're tough to crack, and you've jumped into a few of them, and the good ones are few and far between.
Yeah.
I think a big problem, I don't know what you feel about this, is, like, especially the cradle to grave stuff is tough. Like the full life thing. It's almost, and I think it's a smart thing that like Danny again did to bring it back to Rebel and the Rye is a finite part of his life. Like, you know, there's a postscript that kind of alludes to like the later years or whatever, but, it's hard to encapsulate a life in 2 hours.
Yeah. Completely. Right?
I want to bring back, because we jumped around X-Men for a second, but are you surprised that Simon was able to get the band back together? Because I feel like the last couple films we've been talking like, this might be it. Like, you know, because it's like, it gets harder and harder. Everybody like gets more and more opportunities. Are you surprised at this point that you're doing your fourth now, right, at least?
This is my fourth. Yeah.
That's crazy.
No, you know what? I think it came down to a thing whereby he wrote the script and read it, and I was like, oh, this is some cool stuff character-wise for me, and different to the last movie. So I was like, well, I want to be a part of that. And then, I think, you know, we all have a really good time making them, Fassi and James and Jen and everybody. So it's kind of like, it's a nice thing for us to go back.
Can you tease a little bit about what Hank gets to do this time around? That was interesting.
I don't know if I can tease too much of it.
Okay.
But it's cool. It's just like a different, you get to see some new different stuff.
How many inventive ways have they discovered to figure out how not to have Jen have to put on blue makeup this time? Because we know this is public now that she does not necessarily enjoy it. No one would.
Right, the blueness.
The blueness.
Yeah.
So are there a lot of inventive, I can't turn into Mystique for the next 2 hours because...
Because something happened, I fell over, I hurt my ankle, and now I'm back.
Exactly.
No, it all makes sense when you see it. I think they've done a smart job with all those things as well.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Okay.
It's good. I'm excited for it.
Yeah, me too. So, what comes up after you're wrapped with X-Men? Do you know?
That's when Tolkien starts. So I'll go off and do a little bit of that.
Wait, who's your leading lady in that? They just cast
Lily Collins,
recent guest of Happy Sick. Oh, yeah, she's lovely.
She's great. Yeah. Look forward to working with her.
So what's and in terms, are you happy right now with the kind of stuff that's coming along the pike in terms of diversity of roles and characters? Does it feel?
Oh, Josh, I'm not too happy, to be honest with you.
I know you're eating your feelings in front of me.
I just want to...
Did you finish your Milanos?
No, because I felt bad because, you know, it's really annoying listening to people eat.
Did one Milano do the trick?
No, I'm gonna eat all of these when I get out of this room once we stop recording. But until then,
okay, well,
I'm going to be professional for once and not eat.
No, let's...
In front of a microphone.
We did the professional stuff for 20 minutes. Let's go non sequiturs now, okay? So is Milano your preferred cookie? What is your preferred cookie, generally speaking?
I would go for just a standard choc chip cookie or like a
Chips white Ahoy? Chocolate like chip a cookie. Bollywood
no,
brand.
I want like the soft, freshly baked ones. Soft, you know what I mean? Well, soft on the inside, warm preferably on the inside, and crunchy on the outside. I don't want to get too specific. But you know what I mean.
It always goes back to food with us.
Just right.
Right. We handled sandwiches last time. Now we're moving into dessert treats.
I hope that sandwiches life for people has changed since that interview and improved.
Cake or pie?
Ooh. You know what? We didn't grow up in England with too much pumpkin pie, and I like being in America when pumpkin pie starts coming out.
We're in the season.
Yeah.
I was just in Starbucks. They just changed the menu.
Oh boy. It's a bit too much. I guess too much, isn't it?
Is it
pumpkin, you pumpkin everything over here.
Yeah, I don't need a pumpkin latte.
No.
Pumpkin pie, though. A little nutmeg in
there.
That's
nice. Bit of whipped cream.
Thanks for the... Yeah, that's just in case people don't know, that's the sound of whipped cream going on pie.
That is actually the sound.
Is a secret dream to be a Foley artist? Effect. Do you want to be like the guy that...
What's your best sound effect?
What is? I don't know. I do a good Jar Jar Binks. That's not a sound effect.
Is that it?
Lisa Jar Jar Binks. Lisa, you humble servant.
Oh, damn. Yeah, all right.
It's a horrible talent to have. I mean, literally the world's most reviled character I can do.
That's a good one.
Are you good with accents? Do you do voices, impressions?
No.
See, that's not for you. Just threw me under a bus.
Nothing. I don't do any. You know who's great at impressions? Kevin Spacey.
Yes.
That guy's a don on impressions.
He's a good guy to have as your mentor on screen.
Yeah.
Because you could probably learn something from him off screen
as
well.
He's phenomenal to watch. Yeah. I went and met him in a restaurant up on the upper, that side.
West, east?
Upper east,
east
side. Yeah. I went out there and I walked in and he was sitting there and he had all these cue cards out. And he was learning all his lines off these cue cards. And I was like, oh, what's the deal with that then? And he's like, he likes to learn his lines in a loud, noisy, boisterous sort of place.
Huh.
Because that then means that when he's on set, he can focus in, and whatever's going on around, it doesn't matter because
he's. So he's learning in like kind of the worst possible scenario, so that like.
Yeah, yeah. As opposed to like sitting at home learning them, and then turning up on set, and it's whatever it might be, and you're like, oh boy, I knew my lines when it was quiet and I was chilling, right. But now I don't know.
I think it was Iceman Cometh, which is one of those plays that has like a 45-minute monologue in the middle of it that he had to deliver.
Right, right, right.
I just don't even understand how the mind can work that way. Are you good with like memorization?
Yeah, I can learn any 45-minute monologue.
Seriously?
Yeah.
Really?
No, I don't know. But it's just training your brain, isn't it? It's repetition and just like trying to find out logical parts of what makes sense.
Do you have like a specific, like when you're memorizing like a role that has like a ton of dialogue, like what does it look like in Casa Holt? Are you like walking around talking to yourself, or are you?
Yeah, but yeah, I'll try and do it. I'll do it like in the car. I'll be driving and like repeating like things that I know that are going to be tricky to remember. I find that a long time before filming, I'll read the script pretty much every day and try and do it at nighttime before I go to sleep.
Right.
And do that.
Mm-hmm.
And that's always good. And then gradually start putting it in.
Yeah. It must be good to kind of that way you can get away with talking to yourself in public and people don't know if you're just crazy. Yeah,
you know what? That's quite a good one. I've done that before where I put headphones in pretending to be on the phone, but been walking around like, I don't know, New York or London or whatever, but actually just repeating dialogue.
Right.
And it's actually an interesting little kind of thing to do, because then you find that if you think people are thinking you're on the phone.
Right.
Then you actually behave more naturally than if you think you're practicing lines in a way. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it does.
Because you have to make them work for someone watching you pretending to have a phone conversation.
I would imagine it gets weird though when you're memorizing something like for like X-Men and you're like screaming like, Mystique, get over there.
Get to the jet. We must take down these
I'm changing, help me.
Yeah, you got to be really careful on what you're shouting.
Do you ever, is that the most mortifying thing for an actor to like forget a line on set? Is that still like a thing?
On set, no.
Really?
No.
Because everybody does
like, on stage it would be much worse, obviously. But on set, it's kind of like, all right, back we go, start again. Right. I mean, it's bad if it keeps on happening. Then it's like, oh boy. Oh, this guy. But then that's just like, people haven't put in the work, right?
Right. So that wouldn't happen to a professional like you.
Dude, no way.
Who?
Ever. Who doesn't remember their lines? Is that what you want to ask?
Yeah, who doesn't remember?
You know what? Out of the X-Men group, Jen's least likely to know our lines.
you can say that because she'll cop to it. She's probably sure.
No, she completely knows it. She's least likely to know our lines. Turn up. But then she'll like learn them quick and be on it. But like,
yeah,
least likely to know them.
Have you gotten a sneak peek at Mother? We were talking about Toronto films.
I haven't got a sneak peek yet.
That looks like madness in the best possible
way. Yeah.
That's going to be intense. Have you seen anything lately that you're into?
What have I seen lately that I'm into? I saw War for the Planet of the Apes.
That was good, right?
I like that.
Yeah.
Saw Logan Lucky. I like that.
Mm-hmm.
What else have I seen? That's kind of it, actually.
Have you done any mocapping yet? Am I missing any mocap in your career? Is there any mocap involved for a piece? No.
No mocap.
Practical.
Yeah, that's all practical. So, no.
Do you want to put a lot of balls on your body and run around?
Well, when you say it like that.
Nick, yes, would you be interested in me putting a lot of balls all over your body?
Stand myself with a lot of balls right now and put them on my body. And maybe you could put it on camera. Back to the porn, huh? It all comes back around.
The worst 50 Shades of Grey. But does that intrigue you at all? Like, is like to do that kind of weirdness?
Yeah, dude. The performances of those guys and the apes and that were incredible.
Circus is amazing.
Yeah,
what he can do.
I think it's really cool.
Yeah. Theater. Wait, have we talked about theater? Have you done theater in the last?
I haven't done it. I was meant to do a play this year, but then schedule got changed around. Mm-hmm. I couldn't do it, so I don't know when next might be on the cards.
Is that?
I want to get back into it.
You do?
Yeah. I want to get back into it
to regain your credibility, to make it like a true thespian.
Try and hang on to some sort of dignity out here. You know?
Would you do it here or in London?
I think I'd do it in London.
Okay,
so I can be home. Yeah,
makes sense. Yeah, a good lifestyle too. So it's like the closest thing to like a regular day job.
It is. The last time I did it was kind of nice. You like have the day to do your errands and walk around and do whatever, and then you like go to work. But then you do get this weird thing where you're like suddenly really awake,
right?
And have like this buzz after working at like 11, 12 p.m.
That is the thing, right? I've talked to actors about this, like coming off of like a big play. Like, what do you do with all that energy? Like, how do you get it out of your system?
Yeah,
that's drinking yourself into oblivion, which isn't going to scale at a certain point.
No, you can't do that for months on end. So yeah, it's an odd thing, but yeah.
What was I going to ask? Okay, so we talked film. Last TV show you binged?
Dude, I'm watching, what's it called? This documentary at the moment called, like, Cosmos something or other. It's a documentary all about the universe, and it's blowing my mind.
Is it the Neil deGrasse Tyson stuff?
Yeah,
that's pretty trippy.
Dude, I'm freaking out.
It's really well done.
I love it. Yeah. Like, the first episode I put on, I was sitting there in the apartment, and I was like, whoa. The universe is so big.
Do you know how big the universe was?
I was blowing people up on the text. I was like, you have no idea how big it is. I am now aware of how big it is.
Guess how big the universe is.
But then there's loads of universes inside of those, and it just goes on. And we're all part of the Big Bang still.
Well, speak for yourself. Again, back to the porno.
It's happening. This is wild.
What?
And then the second episode, all about how dogs, you know, how that was selective breeding from wolves, essentially, and how... You know, how we developed those and how we all grew up from individual cells.
By the end of this, you're going to be like the smartest man on the planet.
Dude, I hope so. I'm hoping.
I was going to say, like, if you look at a lot of your roles, whether it's Hank McCoy or Tesla or Salinger, yeah. You're playing, is this like all an elaborate like attempt to make people think you're super smart?
Completely. I'm like, right.
Can you play a dumb guy?
I woke up and I was like, Nick, you're pretty dumb. You don't want to be funny? Go play all these smart guys.
Give me big words to say.
I'm not sure why
I guess you read as smart. Who would have thunk it?
I know. Because I'm really not that smart. I'm not.
You are.
I left school when I was 17 and I am, you know, struggling to get by.
You're street smart.
I'm street smart. Yeah, that's it.
Could you handle yourself in a fight?
No. I can run pretty fast, though.
That's an important element in fighting.
Yeah. As long as you're, you know, faster than the other person.
Are you, did playing Salinger spark any interest in writing?
I would write and prep for that. Write
really?
Short stories, yeah.
How are they?
They're absolute gold.
No, what's the draw is going to come out of your mouth?
Absolute rubbish. No, they're not good. But it was interesting trying to get into that. That different level of perception that writers have when, you know, just being out and about and watching people and seeing how you describe things, it opens up a different vocabulary inside your brain. It was interesting.
Yeah.
I enjoyed it.
Quite
therapeutic.
I would think. Well, that's a big part of the film, too, is sort of like how the process was, you know, as it is for many writers and actors, is catharsis for someone like Salinger. Mm-hmm. Is acting cathartic for you, you think? Does it get a lot of the shit out of your body, you think?
Dude, I do find it very cathartic, actually. Yeah. I enjoy it a lot in that sense, yeah. I find it's a great way to... I wouldn't say that I'm one of those actors that's like, oh, I'm going to use this moment of my past in this scene and that's what's going to trigger the emotion. I'm not doing that, but it's very cathartic when, you know, when you go home at the end of the day and you're wiped out from doing whatever scene it might be, you know, you do feel kind of a sense of
calm. You poured something out. Yeah.
Or maybe you're just very tired and you're just like, I got to sleep. But it is a nice... There is kind of, you know... I find that interesting, particularly when they use like, drama for therapy and stuff in life as well.
Yeah. Podcasting, do you feel like you've poured something out of your soul out today? Do you feel more at peace with yourself?
I love podcasts. I've been listening to so many podcasts.
What's the latest? You turned me on to my dad, wrote a porno. Anything else?
I wrote a porno. I listen to a lot of
you're watching it, you're doing it
Malcolm Gladwell.
Mm-hmm.
Podcast. Yeah. Revisionist History. Go back and listen to all of those. They're incredible.
Really?
And also Hardcore History. By Dan Carlin.
Okay.
I just listened to, five or six podcasts, all about 4 or 5 hours long, about World War One.
Nice.
So I'm pretty down on World War One. I was learning it for the Tolkien thing, because I was like, I want to know what was going on. And I never really, I should have learned it from school, but I didn't probably.
Right.
So I went back
street
and
smart.
Did this, and he's good for it.
Kids out there, you don't need to go to school. Just listen to podcasts.
How much you've learned from this, and
watch biopics.
Although I don't know how much we've learned from this one.
We learned that you eat Milano cookies in a silent, respectful way.
No, that could be played differently depending on how it comes through the headphones.
That you want balls all over your body.
Yeah, we're learning.
And
I don't know if those are things that people can take forward in life.
You never know.
Say something inspiring, dude.
Me?
Yeah.
I'm like, I've run out like years back. And when you turn people on to other podcasts, great.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
The least you can do is other podcasts plug mine.
This is like a light alternative when you've had 5 hours of listening to...
To learning about the universe
to
or whatever.
World War One, and you're like, this is dark. And then you go, all right,
tell us one fun fact about World War One as we sign off here that people don't know.
I don't know. The guy who assassinated Franz Ferdinand was called Gabriel Princip. Prince, yep. however you pronounce his name. Oh, Gabriel.
I didn't know that. You're the expert.
He was the guy who assassinated him. And strangely, I think it was one of those moments whereby they had a failed attempt assassination on him, and his car, like, the driver didn't know the right escape route or whatever.
Right.
And so it just so happened that he turned down a street where Gabriel Princip was. And he, like, I don't know if I'm completely pronouncing his name right, but I think it's pretty close.
This has Google been it. 75% accurate facts with Nicholas.
But he pulled up just alongside him by accident, and the guy was like, oh, damn, this is my chance to kill him. And boom.
Really?
Yeah. So it wasn't the first attempt. It was like, as they were trying to escape, the driver took the wrong route or whatever, and boom.
Fate. If you take nothing else from this.
How crazy is that? And then think of all the things that spiraled from that moment. World War One, communism in Russia, everything.
And take that away and take away the fact that...
Are we finished? I don't feel like I've talked enough.
I'm joking. Also, guys, universe is super fucking big.
I'm feeling pretty fired up. I think it's because I'm having a sugar low or a sugar high. I'm spiking. Something's up.
Oreos next or Goldfish?
Dead. Do I have to say anything about any of these movies more?
I don't think so. Rebel on the Rye. Go check it out.
Go see it, guys. Thanks.
It's legit really good. It's a great performance. You guys all kill it. Nice ensemble. Mr. Kevin Spacey, of course. Always amazing. Paulson. Zoe Deutsch. I always love Zoe.
Yeah.
No, man, honestly, it's a good piece of work.
All right. Nice one.
On to the next stupid podcast. Good to see you, buddy.
Dude, I'll be back before you actually want me back.
could you leave the office, please?
And so ends another edition of Happy, Sad, Confused. Remember to review, rate, and subscribe to this show on iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. I'm a big podcast person. I'm Daisy Ridley, and I definitely wasn't pressured to do this by Josh.